This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get on to the episode.
Welcome to the Counter Narrative Podcast, a show designed to change the way we talk and think about education. By sharing stories of successes and triumphs, we aim to challenge the dominant narrative that often negatively portrays our disenfranchised populations. I'm your host, Charles Williams, an urban educator for more than 15 years, a current school principal in Chicago, an educational consultant, an equity advocate, and the co-host of Inside the Principal's Office. Let's get started. Hey listeners, before we jump into the episode, I wanted to share something with you. On January 6th, it's a Saturday, at 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, I am going to be hosting a webinar for all speakers who want to up their games. In this session, we're going to dive into the rhetorical triangle so we can figure out how to elevate your speaking prowess so you can build a trustworthy persona, connect emotionally, and present logical arguments that resonate with your listeners. But we're also going to learn how to weave compelling narratives through factual content by exploring various story models. Through this, you're going to be able to persuade, teach, and inspire while also retaining the core concepts and messages of your speech. Whether you're addressing a conference room, pitching to clients, or even inspiring a team, the skills you're going to learn during this webinar will help you become a more confident and persuasive speaker. I don't want you just to leave your audience listening, but I want them to be engaged and moved by your words. And as a listener to this podcast, using the keyword counter, C-O-U-N-T-E-R, you'll save an extra 10%. But hurry, there are some early bird pricing going on now, and ticket prices will increase as the time goes on. I can't wait to see you there. Now, let's jump into the episode. Now, before we jump in, I'm going to ask that you stick with me for a moment on this one because my ideas might be a little all over the place. I'm still formulating this whole concept and ideas literally occurred to me just the other day. And I've been rolling it around in my mind. And so I'm bringing it here in this space so I can share it with you because, as always, I would love to hear your ideas, your feedback. So here's my question. When is the last time you have heard the response to a low-performing classroom of, your lessons just need to be more fun, right? If only your lessons were more engaging. When was the last time you heard those words? Teachers, did you hear it from an administrator? Administrators, did you say that to a teacher? Like, it seems that these concepts, these ideas, these phrases have become commonplace in our educational spaces, that we as educators need not to necessarily be a sage on the stage, and we've had that conversation about being the gatekeepers of knowledge, but we seem to have transitioned over to this other end of the spectrum to where we are the ringleaders of this circus performance, so that way our students are engaged and actively participating as opposed to being distracted by technology and phones and other things in the space. And I get it, right? I will admit I've been an educator who has said those things to my staff. I've been a teacher who has received that message. But I'm starting to question how far we have pushed into that and maybe the unintended consequences we're seeing because of it. Now, let me give you some background. In my school right now, we're focusing on what we're calling purposing. This idea that at the beginning of a lesson, right, obviously a teacher's communicating to their students what they're going to be doing, but also for the teacher, for the educator in that space to make sure that, am I actually teaching what I said I'm going to teach? How many times have lessons been developed and designed and it has nothing to do with the standard or the skills, and then we assess maybe based off those standards and skills and students aren't where they need to be? or we even assess off of what we taught, but it isn't necessarily aligned with standards, and then we wonder why our students struggle, right? Whatever it might be. Our goal is to see alignment from beginning to end, right? From beginning of lesson to end of lesson, from beginning unit to end of unit, so that it just makes sense. We are being purposeful and intentional about how we are approaching lessons. So with that being said, we are looking at three different pieces. The what, the how, the why. The what am I learning, right? The actual content, the skills, the standards. The how, what is the content of that, the vessel or the medium on which that lesson will be delivered. And then the why. Why am I learning this? What is the relevance behind learning this? How does this connect to the bigger unit? How does this connect outside of school? Whatever it may be, the why, the what, the how, and the why. So we started looking into this, doing the observations within classrooms, watching teachers, you know, outline this for their students, speaking to students, trying to figure out their understanding, their interpretations of what is happening in the class. And what we're seeing is that in a majority of classrooms, students can definitely communicate the how. But what's happening there is that how is being presented as a what, as in what are you doing, not as what are you learning. I think a key difference in the questions that we ask in the space, what are you doing versus what are you learning, because students were able to explain what it was that they were doing, right? They can talk about the activity, the learning task, but the skills and the knowledge and the understanding that are tied to that often are so muddled down in the activity that students don't walk away knowing the skill that they've walked away with, meaning that the next time that they are asked to engage with that skill or that task, they look dumbfounded and say, well, what do you mean? I don't know how to do that. I mean, think about that as a teacher, as an educator. How many times have you said, we just went over this, we just did this, we talked about it last week or last month or the last unit, whatever it may be. But what if it was that skill, that content was so muddled down with whatever activity it was that you were doing? I can think back to my freshman year of biology class, and I remember this vividly. And here's why I bring this up, because that was many, many years ago. But we were studying plant and animal cells. And I remember the activity was that we had to bake a cake, and we could choose an animal cell or a plant cell. And I remember that we brought the cakes into school. I remember that we had a little cake party with it. But to be honest, I have no idea what it was that we were actually learning. And I remember laying in bed before I recorded this episode thinking, Charles, as an educator, you could probably figure it out, right? You could probably make the connection between what it was that you were learning and the skill itself. But for the life of me, I couldn't remember. I could barely remember the parts and the functions of the cell, let alone did I actually choose pieces to represent those in some actual way. No, the only thing I remember is baking the cakes and us like eating them later. And I may even be making that part up because I'm thinking maybe that wouldn't have worked so well. But that was one of the other things that we saw in the classrooms, that students were attempting to make connections. Even when teachers didn't explicitly say the what, the how, and the why, students were attempting to make the connections, telling us that they do want to understand what it is that they're learning, but without that explicit information, without it being very, very clear as to what they were learning, students were trying to make that own connection, which could potentially lead to misunderstanding, mislabeling, misconnections in the absence of that drier, more non-fun stuff. And it just got me to thinking about our students in our space and how oftentimes they're progressing through grades because they're able to have the information, maybe for a short period of time, regurgitate it for an assessment, but they're not really hanging on to it. It's one of the biggest complaints that I receive from my teachers and my staff is that students are not retaining their understanding, that they're not holding on to it. And I'm wondering if it's because of our approaches. And to be honest, to take this a step further, I was thinking back to my own daughter's experiences and the experiences that I've had in the buildings where I've worked. As I've mentioned, and there's no shame in this, that I moved to an entirely different district many, many years ago so that my daughters could receive what I would consider a high quality education. And I remember sitting in those spaces with those teachers, sometimes during, not necessarily during the lessons, but during parent-teacher, conferences, during, open house, and they were explaining how their classes worked. And I looked around and I thought to myself, if I were to evaluate you based on the criteria that we have in place within my district, you would fail. Where's the pomp and the circumstance? Where's the fun? Where's the engagement? Where's the excitement? Where are those pieces? And yet, that school district consistently outperformed the districts where I worked. And I'm sitting in this space now as I'm pondering on this, and I'm wondering, right? I read something, I believe it was by Pablo Neruda, that this idea that education is often used as a tool to perpetuate the systems that are intended to exist. And I remember reading that and I felt conflicted and I felt angry because as an educator, there's no way that I'm contributing to the intentional damaging of students of our society. There's no way. And yet more and more as I explore, as I dive deeper and deeper and deeper, as I uncover these layers, I begin to question whether intentional or not, the damaging effects that these approaches are having, because they so often show up in our most impoverished spaces, our most low-performing schools. And while it may look great on the surface and because it's packaged in this shiny and beautiful and fun and exciting way, yes, it's innovative, yes, it's exciting, but does it get the job done? Now, I would love to do some research into this, but our initial dive into this within our own school is telling us it does not. It leaves our students without the skills and understanding that they need to truly be successful. And while I'm not saying that there's no place for fun and excitement and relevance in these spaces, but I would encourage you to do an examination and to figure out, is there a balance between relevance and rigor? Is there a balance between that fun and fundamentals? Because I truly think that if we are not careful, if we continue to sit in that space, we're going to do more damage than good. And at my point at a high school, there's not a lot of time left to correct the damage that we may have caused. Something to think about. Until next time. I want to thank you for listening to the Counter Narrative Podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please be sure to like, subscribe, and of course, share it with friends and family. I'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show, so please leave a comment or two as well. Now, I'm not sure what platform you're using, but the show can be found on Anchor, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify, and plenty of other platforms. If the show isn't on your preferred site, let me know, and I'll be sure to get it up and running. This podcast is also featured on schoolrubric.com, where you can find educational articles, videos, and interviews with educators from around the globe. Be sure to connect with me and other listeners by following the show on Twitter at the CN Podcast and joining the show's Facebook group. Take care.